Concho with Anna DeVlantis. Anna's off today. Richard Roper is in.
Hello, hello.
Senator Dick Durbin joins us on the hotline right now. And, Senator, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. A very, very busy time, as it has been in Washington, D.C. First, your thoughts. I would like to get your initial thoughts on a statement that just came out of the White House about an hour ago, a little over an hour ago, concerning the their response to this mass shooting in Florida, to the most recent mass shooting in Florida. And it did appear that they're about to make an announcement about bump stocks and support a, even though that had nothing to do with this particular carnage, it did in Las Vegas, but some sort of action against this bump stock technology that turns a semi-automatic rifle into a fully automatic rifle. Your thoughts on that?
This is a news filler. It's an attempt to make sure they have something in the news cycle that says the White House is going to do something about gun safety. It is an empty promise. This agency has been reviewing this since the tragedy in Nevada. They are determining, and I think they will soon, there has to be a change in the law, something that many of us have been calling on since that massacre in Las Vegas. It really means little or nothing.
Is there anything you think that can get passed here, given the fact that Republicans who generally sided with NRA initiatives are in control of both the House and the Senate?
Well, I can just tell you, the Republican majorities in the House and the Senate have stonewalled any effort to move to the issue of gun safety. In fact, they prided themselves on the fact that they removed a regulation from the Obama era, which called for closer scrutiny of those with mental illness before they'd be given the right to buy a firearm. They said that's one of those pesky regulations we got rid of. And now we know that that's just exactly what we need, is more scrutiny to make sure that we have valid background checks and keep guns out of the hands of people who would misuse them. 94% of the American people see that. I don't understand why the majority leader and the Speaker of the House don't see it.
Let's talk about the Russian meddling situation here. The president obviously tweeting over the weekend that if the FBI were less interested, I'm paraphrasing here, but I think I'm being generous in my paraphrasing. If the FBI were less interested in his Russian investigation and meddling, they could have been more effective in terms of stopping this guy down in Florida, which on its very face is one of the most ludicrous and to my mind, in my opinion, one of the most offensive tweets of his Twitter career. If you know how the FBI operates and what how they separate their duties here and what Florida would be responsible for and those field offices would be responsible for versus Washington and all the rest of it, it is a I cannot imagine anything as insulting as this administration has been to the FBI over this last year. I can't imagine anything worse than that. But having said that,
well, let me say at the outset, you know, I'm sorry that they didn't follow through, and we ought to figure out why they didn't. It is a serious question. It demands a serious answer. But why in the world is every tweet from this president, every incident, every challenge in America all about him? All about him. You know, the bottom line is the FBI is an important law enforcement agency. He has been trashing that agency from the beginning of his administration because they've been asking hard questions about what happened with the Russian infiltration of our last election. Instead of this president leading as commander-in-chief and leader of this country to make certain that our election process, our right to vote, is protected from infiltration from Russians or any other source, all he does is give us these tweets after tweet after tweet about how it's all about him. Why do they keep picking on him? You know, it gets a little tiresome after a while. And can I add something else? When a president tweets 15 times in 19 hours, and that's what he recently did, this is not some spontaneous thought popping into his mind. I don't question for a minute that there are staff people there generating these tweets in his name around the clock.
Well, in some cases, you can read between the lines to figure out which ones there's some legal terms of art that are used in a couple of them over the weekend. That clearly was written by a lawyer.
Yeah, and when the spelling and the grammar suddenly improve, I think it's probably a staffer.
That's a separate issue. All right, but let me ask you this though about let me go back to the let's be fair here. In the case of what the argument that the White House is making here is that during the 2016 cycle, you know, basically enforcement of, you know, and fighting the Russians would have been on Barack Obama. And what were they doing? I mean, he's saying he's done so much more, which on its face is also inaccurate. But what more do you think the administration, the Obama administration, could have done in 2015 and 2016 as they were starting to realize what was going on here?
Well, I don't think there's been a full disclosure in what they did do, and I think it's a legitimate question. Let's find out what they did. Let's make it as public as we can without compromising important sources. But here's the record. From January 20th, 2017 to the current day, President Donald Trump has done nothing, nothing when it comes to this Russian activity that's been confirmed over and over again, which he's called a hoax over and over again. And we are facing another election cycle where we know the Russians are playing in our backyard. They are trying to infiltrate our news media. They're infiltrating our social media. And the American people are going to be hard-pressed to figure out what's true and what isn't if we don't step up and say to the Russians once and for all, get the hell out of our backyard.
All right, let's switch gears here to DACA. Obviously, we are now under 2 weeks away here. It's a week from Monday that the protections for the Dreamers, if you will, expire. And it doesn't seem that we are any closer to a solution here for them. Do you think that by a week from Monday, there will be some sort of action, government action, to protect these, at least the first 600,000-700,000 of them that have signed up for DACA that would be covered here? Or will people start to get thrown out of the country?
On September the 5th of last year, President Trump and Attorney General Sessions announced the termination of the DACA program, an executive order by President Obama, which protected 780,000 young people who'd come forward, gone through criminal background checks, and were going to be spared from being deported and being allowed to work in America. They put the termination date as March 5th, and as you mentioned, it's barely 2 weeks away. What have they done in the meantime to solve the problem? Exactly nothing. I have gone to this president personally twice with bipartisan proposals from the Senate, trying to find his support to solve the problem he created. He's rejected them both times. It's up to this president to solve the problem he created. If he doesn't, on March 5th, 1,000 of these Dreamers every single day will lose their protection and be subject to deportation and unable to legally work in America. It is a tragedy created by this president himself.
Is there a system for removing them that you know of?
Of course there is. We have the ICE agency, which is empowered to remove those who are here in undocumented status. And when these young people...
did we just lose the senator there? There we go. Senator, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I'm sorry. We lost you for a second there. But ICE can start removing them as many as 1,000 a day, is what you're saying, starting March.
On average, 1,000 a day will lose their protection. Okay. Under DACA, and they will be subject to deportation.
Let me ask you this question. How is your relationship with the president now? Do you have any? Obviously, you were the person who, from that meeting, who came out and said that the president, in a meeting with both with lawmakers in the Oval Office, used the term "asshole countries" to refer to, you know, countries out, you know, in Africa and other places that that he didn't want people coming in from. He wanted more people coming in from Norway. And if you've seen the Olympics, and I, you know, who would disagree with him? But you're the one who, you know, was publicly talking about that. Are you able to continue to communicate with him? Are you going to be able to negotiate with him?
I'm still negotiating or working with his chief of staff, John Kelly, as well as his congressional liaison. We've had several meetings since that incident occurred. I stand by every single word I said. That is the word the president used. It's been verified by another person in the room there. Many others have failing memories as to what happened. I can't forget what happened.
Okay. But it's not affecting these negotiations in any way, you don't think?
Well, let me tell you, we're getting nowhere with this president when it comes to negotiating on the big issues. And when it comes to the problem he created with DACA, he's impossible. He wants us to come through with immigration changes which will start to restrict legal immigration in America. People who have waited in line, followed the law, trying to be reunited with their families, would be denied that opportunity. We haven't gone through that since 1924, and one of the most odious pieces of legislation ever passed by Congress. And this president wants us to return to those good old days.
Senator, I think by now a lot of us, sadly, know that this president isn't going to change his ways. But how frustrating is it for you to see so many Republicans, including those you've worked with in the past, who seem to be reasonable and able to sometimes work on things? How frustrating is it to see so few of them, if any, who are willing to stand apart, to stand alone, to stand up to the president?
I'm an amateur student of history. I remember Watergate. And there was a great silence among Republicans as things were crashing around Richard Nixon. And finally, a handful of courageous, really, really patriotic American Republicans stood up and said, enough. We're going to this president. We're going to confront him personally and tell him the end is near if he doesn't resign. It took the handful of those Republican leaders to make a difference in history. I think we're seeing a repetition at this point.
Think that will happen again?
I don't know, but I really have confidence in many of my Republican friends. Privately, when the cameras are gone and people aren't listening, they tell me how they feel, and I feel the same way I do. Yeah. We are facing the prospect of a constitutional crisis here. Those of us in elective office have to be honest about it, stand up for the constitutional values we were sworn to uphold.
Well, it's interesting because some Republicans, Jeff Flake among them, have stood up and tried to, and Jeff Flake has been, one of the most pointed critics of the president, and fellow Republicans aren't listening to him. Hey, and I want to also refine the point here that you are making, Senator, about that act in 1924, which was intended to restrict Jewish and Italian immigrants from coming into the United States, because back in the 1920s, they were seen as the enemy. They were seen as people that were coming in causing crime and unrest and possible communism and other kinds of things that were being seen, these people coming in from Europe. And now you think about, here we are almost 100 years later, and you think about what contributions people of, whether it's Jews or Italians or any of the other people who came in the early part of the 20th century have made. And and then you look at it in the light of this, and your mind it's boggling. It's mind-boggling to think about how we could be back here again.
I tell you, I have a selfish view on this. I confess it. My mother was an immigrant from Lithuania in 1911, just a few years before this odious law was passed. And it was her people, as well as the people that you mentioned, the Italians, the Jews, the Asians, who were excluded by those quotas in that law in 1924. It took us 41 years before we had the courage and I guess the common sense to step up and finally change that kind of immigration law. Now the president's people are proposing a return to reducing legal immigration in America by the same numbers as we saw in 1924 and excluding groups from certain countries that I won't characterize on your family-oriented show, as the president has called them.
All right. Senator, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Good to talk to you.
Senator Dick Durbin. It's a long journey to get here, but I think someone has to stand up and say that that there are things that are happening here in America that are just not right. And, when is it going to take, there's Republicans who off the record will say it over and over and over again, and some on the record are saying it. This isn't about left and right anymore. This is about right and wrong. And what we're seeing here is a whole big bowl of wrong.
Yeah.
All right. Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the newsroom?